complex habitats. So species come tautologically from the process of speciation, the branching of the tree of life. We've had a lot of talk about that. Incidentally, since my work sometimes involves asexual taxa, as in this model, I'll be using the term speciation in a broad sense to include evolutionary branching. So to understand why there are so many species, of course, we need to understand how speciation works, what promotes or inhibits it. The drawing at right was made by Charles Darwin. It's the earliest depiction of an evolutionary tree. And to explain the origins of biodiversity, we need to zoom in on this tree and focus on an individual branching point. That's what the model that I'll be showing you today is designed to do. So research indicates that environmental heterogeneity is often important to the process of speciation, and environments can vary spatially in two common ways. There can be smooth gradients from one type of environment to another, such as the gradient from plains to mountaintop shown here, and notice that this gradient is nonlinear. The plains go on the same for miles and miles, and then as you go up the slope of the mountain, the environment changes more and more rapidly. There can also be random patchiness in the environment. This rather extreme example is of a tidal wetland, but in any forest or meadow, there are going to be spots that are drier or moister or hotter or cooler. This environmental variation is important to speciation for three reasons. First of all, a heterogeneous landscape contains a diversity of local environments and contrasts, and if any of those local conditions promote speciation, then the landscape as a whole may promote speciation. In other words, the sum may be greater than the average of its parts. Second, heterogeneity can provide refugia, areas that act as safe havens for organisms, allowing colonization and adaptation to environments which would otherwise be too inhospitable. An oasis in a desert, for example, could be a refugium that would allow a species to survive in the harsh desert environment, and over time that species might become adapted to the surrounding desert and become a new desert species. And third, local adaptation can act as what's called a magic trait, a trait that both influences non-random mating and is under divergent selection. Organisms are likely to choose mates that are spatially proximate, and spatially proximate mates are likely to be adapted to similar local conditions. So assortative mating is an inseparable side effect of local adaptation in an environment that has autocorrelated heterogeneity, provided that the dispersal distance of the organisms is sufficiently short. So to investigate these ideas, I built a speciation model based upon an earlier model in Heinz Matsuko and Diekmann 2009. It's an individual-based model with asexual reproduction. Time in the model is continuous with overlapping generations. Natal dispersal is modeled with a Gaussian offset from the parental location. And evolution occurs in this model in the ecological trait of the individuals. There's local competition based on that ecological trait, so individuals compete most strongly with other individuals that are both close to them in space and similar to them in ecology. Speciation occurs both as a result of this competition and as a result of adaptation to the environment. Individuals in the model live in a two-dimensional space that's complexly heterogeneous, like that picture there, and the complexity of the spatial structure is the really new thing about my model. So let's look in more detail then at how landscapes are built in my model. First, there's the effect of slope, which makes a linear gradient from the left to the right edge of the environment. This is the only type of environmental variation that's really been explored in previous models of this kind, but real environments vary non-linearly, and real environments are patchy, as we saw before. So adding a little bit of curvature has the effect of making the variation nonlinear. The environment changes slowly on the left and rapidly on the right. This might be like the gradient from the plains to the mountaintop that we saw before. If the curvature is high relative to the slope, then the function becomes parabolic so that the middle of the environment is different from the two edges. This might be seen in the real world in a river valley, for example. Additionally, I modeled spatially continuous patchiness. For this, I used two parameters, the amplitude or volume of a noise function and the autocorrelation length or distance scale of that noise. So let's focus on one particular slope and curvature, and let's look at the effects of amplitude first. Here you can see the effect of a small amplitude of added noise. The gradient of the landscape is still dominant, but there's a bit of variation. As the amplitude increases, the noise gets stronger until it comes to dominate the landscape, somewhat obscuring the underlying gradient. This might be rather like the patchy wetlands that we saw before. You've been seeing a very short autocorrelation length, which means that the noise is very fine-grained in space. As the autocorrelation length increases, the noise gets more blurry and its scale becomes broader. A large autocorrelation length representing very broad-scale random variation in the landscape might be like broad rolling hills, as shown here. So now I'm going to give you a live demonstration of my model, and we'll see how well this goes. Okay, there is the model. So I need to get my cursor over here. Okay. So this is my model in action. The green crosses here are individuals that are being born and are dying in a two-dimensional landscape. There's an ecological gradient across the landscape from red to blue that defines the kind of individual that would be most fit at that point in the space. Each individual has an ecological trait value shown as its color that defines the type of environment where it's most fit. At the start of the run, all the individuals were green, so they were most fit in the center. But because there's selection, heredity, and mutation in the model, the population can evolve over time, and it's already doing so. We can see the frequency of different values of the ecological trait in the plot at the upper right. As you can see, the population has already branched into discrete subpopulations of different colors, each well adapted to its own local portion of the ecological gradient. What allowed them to do this? Essentially, it has to do with the spatial clumping that you see. The individuals have a dispersal distance trait, as I mentioned before, which is constant for any given run of the model. In this run, the dispersal distance is quite low, so spatial clumping occurs. Offspring stay close to their parents on the same part of the gradient, and so local adaptation to the gradient becomes possible over time. So we get blue subpopulations and red ones and green ones, each of which is well adapted to the part of space that they inhabit. I can pull up the graph at the bottom right of the ecological trait values for the population over time, and you can see that branching into discrete groups, which we might call species, has occurred. Incidentally, you might notice that the diversity was actually highest in the middle of the run. We had branches, we had four branches at that intermediate time, and now we have only three. One got driven extinct, and now the model has settled down into a steady state of three branches. This pattern of initial over-diversification, followed by a weeding out of some branches, is actually observed in some real-world evolutionary trees. Okay, so let's pause the model now, and let's try a different value of the dispersal trait. Instead of 0.05, let's try 3, meaning that offspring end up quite far from their parents. Let's restart the simulation and see what happens. So this time, because of the high dispersal, it's hard for the population to become adapted to the local environmental conditions. They're smeared out all over the landscape, and so they keep a value of the ecological trait that's close to green to maximize their average fitness. We could let this run for a while, and transitory branches might be seen, but they would soon go extinct, and only the green branch would persist. Let's try one final parameterization. Let's add noise to the model. Let's change the amplitude of the noise from 0, no noise, to 1, lots of noise, and let's bring the dispersal trait back down to its original value of 0.05. We restart the simulation. And now you can see that the initial populations, which are green, are rather trapped in those parts of the landscape that are green. Outside of those green areas, the landscape changes so rapidly and extremely that it's very hard for the organisms to adapt to new areas. Eventually, a few populations will succeed to a limited extent, but noise has a profound effect upon their ability to diversify. So that, in a nutshell, is what my research is about. I'm looking at the effects of spatial variation and dispersal behavior on the potential for evolutionary branching in a population. These effects are complex. Noise doesn't always inhibit branching, and short dispersal distance doesn't always promote it. The interactions between the various factors are quite complex and interesting. So let's go back to my slides so that you can see some of my results. So, 2 minutes. Where did all my time go? Okay, well, I'm not sure what happened there. I got 15 minutes, right? I can only show a few results in the time that I have, but I'll try to put together a little bit of a story for you so that you can see the kind of insight that the model can give. So going quickly, one simple finding is that intermediate environmental gradients most strongly promote branching. If you're too steep, then dispersal on the gradient is lethal. If you're too shallow, then there's not a diversity of environments to adapt to. This plot shows a two-way interaction. So here we can see that steep environmental gradients with long-distance dispersal particularly strongly inhibit evolutionary branching, because long-distance dispersal on a steep gradient is particularly likely to be lethal. And finally, this is a three-way interaction. Each plot shows the interaction between slope and noise amplitude. The left plot is for low dispersal, then medium, then high-range dispersal. And what this shows is that when noise amplitude and gradient slope are both high, long-range dispersal actually promotes branching. So let's try to put this together. Remember that the two-way interaction that we saw showed that long-distance dispersal on a steep slope was very bad for evolutionary branching because it's likely to be lethal. Then, though, we saw what seemed to be the opposite message with the three-way interaction. Long-distance dispersal on a steep slope is good for branching if noise amplitude is high. I think this is because the noise creates safe pockets on the slope, refugia, that organisms can land in when they disperse, allowing the slope to be colonized. Since my model's the first to ever look at these kinds of effects of noise, I think this is a rather an interesting finding. So that's just a tiny taste of the kinds of effects and interactions that my model has revealed. In broad terms, though, we can conclude that intermediate levels of environmental variation strongly promote branching, while either too little or too much variation inhibits branching. Our model allows us to predict the biodiversity effects of dispersal distance, the size of refugia, and the shape and the steepness of environmental gradients. And these quantitative predictions have implications for biodiversity conservation, but I think I have to skip that slide. So there goes that. And there goes that. Okay, and I'd like to thank these people and funding agencies for their support, and thank you for listening.
Maybe one question?
Yes. Following up Jim's question from the morning, did you allow to have hybridizations between these populations so you can get some transgressive segregation for new habitats?
Well, this model is an asexual model, so in this particular model, no, there's no hybridization or nothing of that sort at all going on. We plan to as well do a sexual version of the model, so we'll get into those questions later. Any other quick question? Okay, thank you.